This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
Between now and April 6th, if you have questions or you want to schedule, call Ani at 503-231-8032, extension 213, or email volunteer at kboo.org.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on our hour-long membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News, an embattled tenant confronts his landlord over disputed fees.
The ACLU files a lawsuit in South Dakota over the illegal removal of Native American children from their families.
Residents in southeast Portland score a victory in their long fight against a controversial development project.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, March 22nd, 2013. KBOO is currently in our membership drive, and we'd like to urge you to become a member by calling 877-500-5266. I'm Zeke.
And I'm Linda Olson Osterlund. The Oregon Center for Public Policy published a series of graphs this week demonstrating how a freeze in income limits imposed in the early 90s has made it harder for needy families to qualify for temporary assistance. KBOO reporter Robin Ryan spoke with Janet Bauer, a researcher with the Oregon Center for Public Policy, about the presentation.
I'm talking with Janet Bauer of the Oregon Center for Public Policy, and they published a graphic earlier this week about the frozen state of temporary assistance for needy families. Can you tell me how you chose to present the information that way?
One of the reasons why we decided to put together this graphic is to illustrate the fact that the income limit for this important anti-poverty program for children in Oregon has been frozen for over two decades. And so we wanted to illustrate what that meant in terms of how deeply in poverty people now need to be in order to access services to this important program, and how little earnings that they can make and still be eligible for services.
And where did you obtain the information used to create the graphic?
The information that we used was eligibility information from the state agency that runs the program. And we also used information about federal poverty levels over time between 1991 and 2013. One of the things we also showed was in 1991, when the monthly income limit was established at $616 per month for a three-person family, a person could actually earn at minimum wage. They could work 30 hours a week. And today, because the income limit is frozen and our minimum wage, thankfully, has gone up, people can only work about 16 hours or 2 days and still get the critical assistance. So one of the data sources that we used was information from the Employment Department about Oregon's minimum wage over that period.
Is there an environment where folks can go to find text in it that supports the graphic imagery employed?
Yes, absolutely. Our organization has a number of publications about temporary assistance to needy families, and people can find this graphic as well as other information about who the program serves and how it has served them at occpp.org.
Let me say that again. That's occpp.org.
That's right.
And that was KABU reporter Robin Ryan with Janet Bauer, a researcher with the Oregon Center for Public Policy.
The Federal Aviation Administration today released a list of 149 air traffic control towers across the country that could be closed as a result of budget cuts. Included on the list are five airports located in Troutdale, Salem, Pendleton, Klamath Falls, and North Bend. The FAA is being forced to trim $637 million this fiscal year as a result of spending cuts from the sequestration. The airports will still remain open, but pilots will be required to coordinate takeoffs and landings themselves. All of the airports targeted for tower shutdowns have fewer than 150,000 total flights per year.
The Portland Solidarity Network assembled a crowd today to support a renter who is confronting his landlord. The renter contends his landlord is imposing accumulated late fees and other retroactive charges that total nearly $800. The tenant delivered a letter demanding that the landlord return what money had been paid, as well as a waiver to dismiss the remaining balance. The group delivered the letter to the property manager's office today in Northeast Portland.
Ryan Ciesla and Rental Management Services, it has come to our attention that you have charged $787.50 in late fees to Sean Braley. Sean has already paid $100 of this. It is your responsibility to waive the $687.50 still owed in fees and refund the $100 in full by Friday, April 5th, or we will take further action. When you have completed this, please email and call Portland Solidarity Network with the contact information below, Sean Braley and the Portland Solidarity Network.
The Network of Housing Justice Advocates says it's dedicated to using direct action to fight back against greedy bosses and landlords. A meeting is scheduled for Sunday afternoon to plan what the next steps of the campaign will consist of.
KABU volunteers have stepped up their game to bring you this locally produced newscast every single evening. So now we're asking you to do the same. Joining us now are Andrew and Dan to talk about how you can support KABU Community Radio.
Well, you can support KABU Community Radio by simply picking up your phone and dialing 877-500-5266, or you can go online to kboo.fm and accomplish the same thing. The main thing is do it and do it now. Our goal for this drive is $99,000. Our goal for this hour is $250, and one person, two people, 10 people can all help us reach that hourly goal of $250. Again, the best way for that to happen is for you to pick up your phone and dial 877-500-5266. We're located at 20 Southeast 8th, just off Burnside. If you want to stop by, we're here, we're open, we'd love to see you. So stop by and do that. We really like people that walk in the door and say, "Hey, I listen to KABU." Andrew?
It's true. And what we'd really like you to do is make a monthly donation to KABU. We don't need all the money at once, although that's fine. But if it is easier for you to make a smaller monthly payment, then do that. A lot of people find it much more to their advantage to make a little bit of a payment each and every month instead of having to come up with, you know, $100 all at once. $8.50 a month, that's a lot easier to do for a lot of people. We still get the $100 over the course of the year, but you don't have this one big chunk taken out of your account at a time. Your monthly donation means your membership is always current, because that continues until you stop it. And do you have a monthly deduction? No, that's not what you're pointing at, is it?
No.
All right.
No.
What did you have to say?
I have a deduction, but anyway, well, I didn't want to forget that we needed to say thanks to Chris for renewing his membership, or her membership. Or Chris, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Chris.
Yeah, 877-500-5266. Your help is needed and needed now. We really love your support. We want you to be a part of the great KABU community. We've been on the air for 45 years, and we want to be here for another 45 years. Andrew, are you going to be here in 45 years?
No.
No? Well, Do it now. Call 877-500-5266.
Mayor Charlie Hales cut $395,000 from youth programs on Wednesday, going back on his initial interest in expanding the programs. Former Mayor Sam Adams had made contract requests for the programs, which Hales withheld for further review. After the first council meeting, Hales announced that the contracts for the programs would be dropped. The youth programs headed by Work Systems, Inc. were the Summer Works and Summer Youth Connect programs. These programs help troubled youth build academic and work-related skills and find potential career interests, ultimately preventing school dropouts. Executive Director of Work Systems, Inc., Andrew Magoo, is disappointed by the mayor's decision, but said he is understanding of the financial situation. By making these cuts, including $600,000 to his own staff, the mayor has trimmed about $1 million in expenses from the budget.
There were two victories in City Hall this week for a southeast Portland neighborhood struggling against a development project. The Portland City Council lowered fees in historic districts, and Mayor Charlie Hales reversed the decision to fast-track new apartments at Southeast 37th and Division. KBOO's Joe Meyer has the story.
A few years ago, the invisible hand gestured that apartments without parking in Portland were a good bet, and developers have since been cashing out big in Southeast Portland. Neighborhood groups feel left out of the development discussion. In addition to looking for a place to park, they're also looking for a place at the development table by lobbying city council, by appealing city development decisions to a state court, and in the Buckman neighborhood by forming an historic district. Based on recent construction, most surprisingly at Southeast 20th and Morrison, the invisible hand doesn't care what the new apartments look like or how they fit into existing neighborhoods. Let's start with Judah Gold Markle of Richmond Neighbors for Responsible Growth, talking about the 81-unit parkingless development half done at Southeast 37th and Division.
The developer at the 37th Street and Division, Dennis Sackhoff, tried to expedite his new permit in order to avoid falling under these new rules. And so BDS helped facilitate that, and in a manner that was not very transparent to the community. And it came off as them, whether it was intentional or not, as them colluding with the developer. And there was a big community unrest, and a lot of people started writing in saying how unhappy they were with this. And on Thursday evening, Mayor Hales came out with a press release that he was going to suspend the expedited permitting of the 37th Street project. We do know that at this point, the developer, Dennis Sackhoff, and his group, Urban Development Group, do have to go through the public notification process, so they'll have to meet with the community on April 8th, Monday, at the Richmond Neighborhood Association meeting, which takes place at the Waverly Church at 33rd and Woodward, 7 p.m.
Other than showing up for the meeting, is there any other requirement?
No, technically they don't have to do anything further but show up. However, with all the controversy that's been around this, we would hope that, or around this permitting process, we would hope that they would be slightly more amenable to coming to the table and trying to come up with a solution that benefits not only them, but us as well, and allows them to continue to make a significant profit, which they will make on this building, and at the same time allow the community to have some input on this large plan, because we will be living with this building for the rest of our lives.
With Mayor Hales, is there a new sheriff in town?
I wouldn't go that far. I think Mayor Hales was simply doing what was there, and he took a bold action where it allowed people to sort of breathe and say, wait a second, what's going on here? Why is this being rushed through? Is it for the benefit of just one side? And we were able to all take a step back from the ledge and sort of come to a more rational decision-making process.
That was Judah Gold Markle of Richmond Neighbors for Responsible Growth. He's hoping for a win-win with developers at their April Neighborhood Association meeting. In the Buckman neighborhood, residents are attempting to form an historic district in order to preserve existing housing stock and to gain a seat at the development table. Here's Christine Yoon of the Buckman Historic Association.
The Bureau of Development Services was proposing $475 as the lowest historic design review fee for the simplest projects. And so I'm part of the Portland Coalition for Historic Resources, as well as a member of the Buckman Historic Association. And we all felt that $475 was still too much. And so we asked them to lower it to $250, and City Council agreed to do that. The vote was 4-1.
And what implications does it have for development in Inner Southeast?
It's taking some of the financial burden off of the homeowner who has thus far been subsidizing the larger developments that required historic design review.
How do you think that affects the chance of getting a historic district in Buckman?
I am hopeful that it will convince people who have objected to the historic district based on the fees previously to change their minds and rescind their objections.
And what's really motivating the historic district in Buckman?
The whole historic district was motivated by the fact that back in 2006, it seemed like there was talk of teardowns and new development happening willy-nilly throughout Buckman. Buckman has a very low owner-occupied rate, and so there are very few people who are owners who live in the neighborhood, and the concern was that they would sell the neighborhood to developers. And so the historic district is the only tool that property owners who live in the neighborhood have to level the playing ground with the developers, because otherwise the developers can just build whatever they want and they don't have to involve input from neighbors. There are two large developments still under construction. There's one at the intersection of Sandy and Ankeny and 12th. It's quite large. I think it looks okay, though, at the intersection, and they didn't have to tear down any historic buildings in order to build it. The second one is at 20th and Morrison, which was one that the neighborhood hotly contested. So they came back with a different developer, the same architect, and they're building two separate buildings. And, you know, the architect showed the neighborhood what they would look like, and it's quite disappointing because the larger building was supposed to be all brick as sort of a reminder of the 1920s brick apartment buildings that are in Buckman. And I guess they decided that they didn't have enough money to do the brick, so they only did the first story, and then the upper two stories are siding, which just looks incongruous and, you know, doesn't make any visual sense.
That was Christine Yoon of the Buckman Historic Association. She hopes that Portland City Council's recent lowering of permit fees in historic districts will ease the way for a historic district in Buckman. For the View from City Hall, I spoke with Mayor Hale's Communication Director, Dana Haynes.
Once upon a time, when we built up cities, there would be at least one parking space per apartment. Today, that obviously doesn't cut it. So a lot of developments are going up with absolutely zero parking. Well, what that means is a big impact on the neighbors, where if you've, you know, got kids and you got to go get groceries and you can't park within four blocks of your house, it's a huge problem. So the city council, recognizing that they need to find a golden mean between all the parking spaces anybody could ever hope to want and no parking spaces, the mayor has asked the Planning Commission come back to the Portland City Council by Thursday, April 4, with an expedited plan for how to address parking for new multifamily developments.
Can you bring us up to date on the development at Southeast 37th and Division? Richmond neighbors won a rare victory at LUBA, the Land Use Board of Appeals.
It wasn't a parking issue. The neighbors had filed four different complaints about the development. LUBA turned down three of them, did accept one of them, which was that the front door was on the wrong side, and that stopped that development. Then both the neighbors and the developer thought they would have to go through a brand new application process. The developer asked the city, well, how about just a revised application process? Somewhere along the line, the developer was told, yeah, that probably works as well, which has a different clock to it. And the neighbors weren't informed that that new option or that second option, not new, but second option was also legal. So when everybody got together, the mayor said, I want to get everybody together to find out exactly who knew what, exactly who communicated what and when and to whom. When that was said and done yesterday, the mayor said, you know what? We did not take the extra step to make sure that the neighbors had the exact same information the developer had. This is a process foul. Let's stop this one. Let's stop this revised application right here and now, because it's not a level playing field.
Does that mean it's subject to the regular process now?
Yeah, that means now the fellow who owns the land can go ahead and apply for a new application. And when he does, then the neighbors will have their opportunity to speak out on it.
That was Mayor Hale's communication director, Dana Haynes. The mayor's office reversed a city decision to fast-track development at Southeast 37th and Division and is working towards a code change requiring parking for new construction. The city also lowered permit fees for remodels in historic districts, making the creation of new historic districts a more attractive option for neighbors seeking a seat at the development table. And this is Joe Meyer with KBOO News.
And this is Linda Olson-Osterlin with the KBOO News. You're listening to a membership drive special of the evening news. And I want to highlight for you our reporter you just heard, Joe Meyer. He's covering this issue in Southeast Portland in depth, as you can tell. And he's covered the Water Bureau issues with the same depth and the issue of the reservoir coverage with the same depth. And if you remember, he was our live reporter every day from downtown on the Mohammed case. That's the kind of reporting we bring you here at KBOO. Oh, and believe it or not, Joe Myers doesn't make a cent. He does this out of love of bringing these issues to you and love of being a reporter and love for KBOO. So I'm hoping as I send you off to Membership Drive Central that you will take a moment to show your love for Joe Myers reporting and for all of our reporting here on the KBOO Evening News that you get to listen to day in, day out.
That's exactly right. KBOO is volunteer-run newscast. People can get training here to learn how to be a reporter, to learn how to be a news anchor. I actually started doing volunteering here as a news reporter back 16 years ago.
I was just a little kid
ago.
Then.
Were you?
Yeah.
Wow. Interesting. 50. Ooh, look at that. I almost gave a number that we don't use. All right. To call KBOO and make a contribution of financial support to us, please call us at 877-500-5266. That's 877-500-KBOO. Could be just $60 for the year, could be $120 for a year, could be $1,000 for the year. Whatever works well for you. We have a $250 goal for the newscast this evening. It costs about $85 an hour to keep KBOO on the air. So I know that's a whole lot of numbers, but just think about those numbers and assess what works well for your budget right now.
And, you know, we'd also like to thank these folks who have provided us with food here. Bar Carlo at 6433 Southeast Foster Road. Ford Food and Drink at 2505 Southeast 11th Avenue, and Nepo 42 at 5403 Northeast 42nd Avenue. Thank you very much for your support. We'd also like to thank, by way of thanking you, how easy is it for you to become a member? For your $60 gift to KBOO, that breaks down to only $1.12 a week. It's on the chart. I'm reading it. I'm not pulling that number out of the ceiling.
It's really not that much money at all.
Not at all.
Think about what you pay for other media, or think about the other monthly bills you get. You don't get to negotiate how much they are, and you really don't have an option as to whether or not you pay them. Now, it's not like I'm saying you don't have to pay the bill you get from KBOO, but you get to choose hopefully you choose to pay for KABU because you're listening to it, you're using the service. Just a little bit of your support will help keep us going. And this is a bill where you get to say, I'll give you $5 a month. Hey, I'll give you $7 a month. How about that?
Or can you give up 1 hour out of your monthly paycheck?
Yep, 1 hour's wage. So if you make $15 an hour, send an hour's worth of your wage each month to KABU. Set it up as a monthly deduction. You don't ever have to think about remembering to send in a check. It'll just automatically be deducted once a month in a secure manner. KBOO will show up on your bank statement that month, and you can feel really good about paying that bill as opposed to, say, you know, like your electric bill, which, you know, I appreciate electricity, but I'm not excited to pay the bill every month.
I'm revolted to hear that.
Are you?
Yeah. No. Hey, listen, pick up the phone right now, 1-877-500-5266, or go online, kboo.fm. And, you know, there are many other things that you get as a part of the KABU community. You can attend board meetings. You can take part in activities, and you get a chance to save money on gifts and services in the community as all a part of your membership. So it's really a great way for you to say, I really like what you're doing on KABU. I really appreciate the programming that you bring to us, the work that the news folks put in, and all of the other things that take place on a 24-hour cycle right here on KABU can all be a part of your life, too. Pick up the phone right now, 877-500-5266, or go online to kboo.fm.
Today, the Oregon House Business and Labor Committee heard Bill 2654, which prevents employers from requesting their employees' Facebook passwords for a background check. Employers cannot demand to be added to contact lists under the new privacy regulations or retaliate against employees who refuse to provide access to social media accounts. The bill also applies to faculty, administration, and students at educational institutions. If passed, the measure will not only apply to Facebook, but to any form of social media.
The head of a corrections department agency was fired last week. Some are speculating it was retaliation for being a whistleblower. Investigators with Oregon's Justice Department told the Statesman Journal this week that Rob Kilgore, the former director of Oregon Correctional Enterprises, may have been fired due to complaints he lodged against the Department of Corrections last fall. The complaints accused the Department of Corrections of bullying Kilgore's agency into expenditures and hiring decisions that his agency disagreed with. After investigating Kilgore's allegations, the Justice Department found no criminal wrongdoing. However, investigators did express concerns about the relationship between the Corrections Department and Oregon Correctional Enterprises, or OCE, a semi-independent agency that employs prison inmates in a range of jobs. Corrections Director Colette Peters defended her decision to fire Kilgore, saying that it was strictly for personnel issues. According to the Statesman Journal, Peters and Kilgore had a differing vision for OCE. The Department of Corrections wanted to expand the agency, while Kilgore wanted to turn it into a nonprofit. Peters insists that the firing had nothing to do with Kilgore initiating a Justice Department investigation last year.
You're listening to an hour-long membership drive special of the KABU Evening News. We'd like to remind you that you can call to renew your KABU membership or become a member at any time during this program by calling 877-500-5266. Stay tuned for Bread and Roses at 6 for a look at Playwright, a local nonprofit working with at-risk youth. At 7, it's Hard Knock Radio, news and views from a hip-hop perspective. Tomorrow's weather is partly cloudy through the weekend.
It's 5:32, time for Jim Hightower, time for daily commentary, I should say, from Jim Hightower.
Senator Rand Paul is not the only speed bump slowing down the push by government contractors, police authorities, and politicians of both parties to bring military drones to America. In his recent filibuster, Paul delivered a 13-hour rant against the idea of littering our airspace with thousands of these surreptitious unmanned aircraft, which inevitably will be used to spy on, invade the constitutional rights of, and even fire on American citizens. While the senator's outrage raised the drone issue to a new level of public awareness, opposition had already been percolating across the country, uniting such diverse constituencies as the ACLU and the Tea Party. Indeed, from city halls to Congress, many officials are trying to ban or at least restrict drone deployment in our land of the free. Clearly, the drone industrial complex has a growing political problem. But hey, in corporate America, where there's a way, there's plenty of will. We're talking extremely big dollars here. As reported by the New Republic, drone pushers at an industry confab, ominously titled The Reapers Come Home, decided that theirs is merely an image problem, starting with the off-putting D-word itself. "That term drone kills us every time," moaned a police official. Another pusher suggested that the menacing black color of the weapons is the problem. He noted that Seattle's police chief tried to get city officials to okay drone use by having one painted pink and rechristening it as Soft Kitty 2000. This is Jim Hightower saying that didn't work in Seattle, but still, the droner complex can be expected to launch a PR campaign that'll make you want to hug one of their machines. Already, the peddlers are describing a sky full of drones over your city as, quote, a nice safety blanket. Good luck living under that.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower.